This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at the Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2023, held at Pleasant View School in Arcola, Illinois, on March 3 and 4.
Well, good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here with you. If I had my preference, I'd probably be sitting where you're at instead of where I'm at, but we'll try to have a good time learning together. There was a teacher who enjoyed math, enjoyed algebra especially. He had some students who did not. And so as...
Can you talk this a little bit louder?
Sure. There was a teacher who enjoyed algebra, enjoyed math. He had some students who didn't. But as Steve Brubaker said from Faith Builders, if you want your students to bleed, you as a teacher need to hemorrhage. And so trying to instill at least a passable liking for mathematics, for algebra, the teacher put a lot of energy into that and trying to help the students see how algebra, math could apply to life, some of the things you can figure out, how it's good for your brain, helps you develop those neural connections, make you a better problem solver, et cetera, et cetera. But then one day, one of the parents, in front of the students, exclaimed, "Yes, I made it through another day without using algebra." How do you respond to attitudes from home? Wasn't really anything wrong with what he said, but it just took the wind out of the teacher's sails. I've been trying to sell this. I've been trying to build energy. Yeah, now you know who the teacher was, right? I knew I'd do that. Anyway. And that, it just felt like it just cut the legs right out from under me. But how can we build a vision together for our schools? And I guess at the beginning here, I'd like to get a little bit of an idea who I'm talking to. Because as I was putting this talk together, I kept thinking down the line of a teacher. I've been a teacher for 20 plus years. And so my knee-jerk reflex is to talk to teachers. But board members are the people behind the teachers. And you're going to have a different perspective. So how many board members do we have here? Any principals, administrators? Okay, a few of you. All right, so that's going to flavor a little bit what you do or how you process some of the things we're going to talk about here today. But I'd especially like to bless you as board members for caring enough to be here. And you know, the teacher is kind of the cutting edge. They're where the rubber meets the road. That's where you actually, the school interfaces with the students and the learning happens. But if a teacher is going to be effective, it's because they have a board that stands behind them, a board that has their back, a board that says, we're not going to shoot you full of holes the first time you mess up, a board that will help them grow. But just that sense of being supported, and you know, if there's a misunderstanding or a situation gets mishandled, we're going to work through it. We're not going to take you out, is huge for helping a teacher be energized to engage and interact with the students in a learning environment and produce the kind of education that we're looking for. So I think before we go further, there's another question we should think about, and that is, who is responsible for the education of the student? Now that may seem a little bit obvious at first, but I think sometimes, without really intending to, we get that thing switched. Is the school responsible for education? Or is the parent? If we go back to scripture, the parent is instructed to teach their children. When you lie down, when you rise up, when you're walking by the way. Now, if the parent enlists the help of the school, I think that's a good thing. And a lot of parents do that. Some choose to homeschool. That's not the discussion today. But I think that's crucial that we understand that. The school is there to help the parents be successful. Okay? And sometimes when we get, what's the word, too wrapped up in academia, we sometimes get to thinking the parents are there to help me as a teacher be successful, help me as a school be successful. Now, obviously, if the schools will be successful, it's because the parents support it. But we need to remember that foundation, I believe, is that the parents are responsible and the school is there to help the parents be successful. The school is a melting pot of the community. Each home has their own unique culture, activities. Some families enjoy games, some don't. Some families enjoy reading, camping, whatever. There's a lot of different activities that families are involved in. Different mindsets. Supper needs to be at 5:30. Oh, no. Supper happens at 8 o'clock just before you go to bed. Different preferences. And y'all are familiar, if you have any kind of connection to a farming community, the intense discussions that happen in first and second grade. Is John Deere better or is it Case IH or et cetera? And it probably is flavored by their families. Vehicles, brands, et cetera. All the things, a lot of different preferences. Likes and dislikes. We had one, I think he was in second grade maybe. One of the mothers brought in hot lunch and there was, they had pizza and applesauce and a few other things. But one of the moms was helping him fix his plate because the little guy was having trouble running his plate. And does he want applesauce? Yeah, he wants applesauce. But then something was wrong. The mother was trying to figure out what the issue is. What's the problem? Oh, the applesauce is supposed to go on top of the pizza. That's how you eat the applesauce with the pizza. Okay, so we fixed that problem and everything was good. Some of us come from families where you don't mix the food. It shouldn't touch. Never mind, it's all going to be together inside, right? Schedules. Some families stay up late and then start slow in the morning. Some go to bed early and they're up and running. Things are happening early in the morning. But we take all those different things and we throw them together into one pot and we need to make it work. And I think sometimes some of the friction that happens is just because of some of those differences that we need to understand and we need to work through. So how do we respond to attitudes that come from home? And I'd like to say this too, I might mess up again, but whatever the case. I have a number of stories, not all from my experience, some from different schools around the country. None of them from here, clarify that. And the idea is not to discredit or throw shade at anybody, but these are real life experiences and we can hopefully learn together from those. And I think it mentioned in the little blurb description of the workshop or the breakout here, hopefully you have some questions or some instances or some things that you'd like to discuss. Hopefully we'll have some time to do that, maybe somewhat as we go through it, but also as we get to, hopefully be some time towards the end where we can do a little bit more of that. So what should the teacher do with that statement, the story I told you at the beginning? How do we bring that together? Is math valuable? I think it is. If the students are going to buy into it, it needs to be perceived as valuable by the rest of the community at large. I remember stopping, we were traveling somewhere and went through a section of our trip where there had been a pretty bad storm. And so they were running the gas pumps off of generators. And they had enough juice to run the generators to pump gas, but not enough to run the lights and the electronics inside the store. And guess who was waiting on customers? The manager, because all the math had to be done with a pencil and a paper. And he was the one that had the skills to do it. The younger employees weren't up to it. I found that interesting. So math is important, but what's the proper response? I'd like some input from you. What's the proper response? How do you respond to that kind of an attitude coming from parents about academics, school, et cetera? Maybe you don't face that.
I don't have a response. You can respond to it, but there's only so much, a certain percentage of that you can undo. Correct?
It's only a certain percentage of that you can undo. It's an excellent point. One of my friends had just gone through eighth grade. That was what the community was doing at that time. And never dreamed that someday he'd be an airline mechanic and a pilot. And he had gone to college for some classes to get the certification he needed, etc. And the place where he struggled the most intensely was in the math. And I also read a statistic that I found interesting. Said in the business world, the single biggest hindrance to people advancing in their careers is lack of a fundamental grasp of math. So I guess part of the reason why I'm telling you guys this is if we're going to, as the brother said, undo the damage, it's going to be because the board planted the seed of a vision and they're excited about it, they see the need for it. And eventually that will flavor the community. This isn't the kind of thing that is going to be a one-parent problem. I think it's more of the kind of thing we need to work at as a community. But again, it's not a cure. It's the other ditch. Education is not the answer to all of our woes or issues that we wish were different as communities and churches. So that was example, yes.
Sometimes I'm just honest with them and say, you may not use this in your life, but you know, it's training skills in your mind that you don't realize is happening.
It's an excellent point, and that applies to a number of different things. This particular skill that you're learning, you may never be able to pull a paycheck with it, but the discipline and the mental sharpening that happens to learn how to work a complex algebra problem is going to make you a better employee on the pole barn crew, in the cabinet shop, etc. And that is something you can pull a paycheck with. Somebody, a hand in the back.
I was going to say, don't give up on the dad. In my community, if I had that, there's a man that's told me that I use algebra in my work, and I had to learn it on my own. Mm-hmm. And so connect the dad. Say, would you mind dropping the hand? Not too old to learn.
Right.
And find someone, like, don't give up on deadbeat dad. Don't.
Good point. Somebody else, yeah.
Why survive when you can thrive? Yeah, you got through the day, but could have been better.
Right. You, and...
One thing I've thought about already, if you can get the students to think about how often you actually use math. Like, it's not just the ladies, too, at home. Or whatever subject it is, didn't think about how often they actually use it.
Excellent point. Think about how often you actually use math. And, you know, just because you can get along without it doesn't mean that it's the best way. You know, the story of the mom who wants to triple the recipe, but fractions never quite connected. So you do one-third, 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 three times. You know, true story. It's not my wife, by the way. But probably one of the best examples is one of the men in church came to me, and it's blessed me so much. Actually, a lot of you would know the guy I'm talking about, Myron Miller, one of my former students who taught school here for a year or two. His dad told me this, And I was like, I wish I'd have known this sooner. But he said, you know, he did construction. He said, when Byron measures up a roof and when I measure up a roof, it's so different. He said, I'm up there climbing around on the roof and sliding and trying to stand, pulling tape measures and writing down numbers. And he said, it's an unhandy, time-consuming affair. And he said, you know, I'm older, and it's barely safe. But he said, when Myron measures up a roof, he walks around the outside with the calculator and punches in numbers and figures angles and comes back. And he said, you know, he does as good or better than I do. He just stays on the ground, walks around the house and figures stuff up. He was pretty impressed. And applications of mathematics, of algebra. So yeah, tell the stories of the times when it was useful. Yes.
Going back to your story, it was a setting where I guess the dad was saying this in front of students. So I just want to bring in a little perspective there that probably the worst thing you can do is have a showdown with dad, hear about the
excellent
comment
point
that he made. Because the students already know what you think. And they're going to be looking to you for a response. And if you can shrug it off, thank the dad for his comments, whatever, and let it go, I think you get a lot further. Because you won't get anywhere having a showdown with dad.
Exactly. And I think it's one of the things we want to remember. Hopefully you all can hear what he said. He said, don't get into a showdown with dad in front of the students. Because one of the things that I think we need to be careful about is we don't want to make the student pick sides. You know, we've got the teacher saying this, we've got dad saying this. So as much as possible, don't come out butting heads, but maybe come alongside and direct. And yeah, you don't have to give an answer right there. That was an excellent point. So that was example one. Example two, how do you respond when there are, there's work that needs to be done. Maybe a student didn't get the things done that they need to, but they come back and it's like, well, we just didn't have any time. The family had plans, or we were doing this, or we were doing that, and there just wasn't any time. They just couldn't get it done. And other things happen, and you get the distinct feeling that on the priority list, school is down there right about with weeding the flower bed on the back side of the shop. It's like, what? How do we respond to that? I think we may have addressed some of that with the talking about the mathematics. But some of the other things. How can we respond when that attitude comes up? It's just not important. Any ideas? Yes.
Ask them to teach a shop class. And sometimes the way the most you wouldn't consider that dad as a candidate, but he's probably thinking about some skills that he has. One thing we did, and I said this in the other class, we brought in dads to sell their job to the children. The carpenters came and tried to sell their job, the electrician, the truck driver, and we all came in and brought gear and stuff and tried to encourage boys to go into our profession, right? Mm-hmm. And just talk about what you do for a living. It's really incredible.
Excellent. And the way education affects all of those things. Because I think one of the questions we need to ask is why we do school. And that comes back to you as board members. Can you sell it to your community? Why do we do school? And that's a bigger question than we have time for right here, but I think it's good for us to think about. Are we doing school just because we know what we're against? We don't want the public education? Or do we know what we're for? Do we know why we're doing it and what we're trying to produce? What kind of attitudes and values we want to have. Really appreciated Matt's presentation. There was some really good stuff to think about. What about when you have a critical spirit or critical attitude toward the school? That could be towards staff, that could be towards curriculum, could be towards policy. There was a school where a teacher, they were looking at, well, the board was considering a curriculum change. They were looking at going to CLE. And there was some pretty vehement opposition from some of the parents. And I think when we run into opposition or a negative spirit, critical spirit, before we react to that, one of the things we need to do is stop and say, why? Where's that coming from? And when you stopped and asked why, things made a lot more sense. This particular parent had a very negative experience with some of the first runs, I guess you'd call it, of CLE. It was, if you had a good teacher, they could make it work. If you didn't, it was a pretty difficult curriculum for the students to make work on their own. And again, I'm not throwing shade at CLE. So when she thought about her children having to do this CLE curriculum, right away she flashed back to her school curriculum, her school experience, and dug in her heels and is like, there is no way, we're not going there. But understanding that helped administration know how to work with it in an understanding way, help her understand that, yeah, the curriculum you used is not the curriculum we're looking at. And I think the board made a wise choice in that situation. They decided not to do a whole school switch, but they started in first grade and rolled it through. It took a lot longer, but it was much more gentle and it was much kinder to the students than a whole school curriculum switch. There was a school where a teacher replaced a long-term teacher, and the teachers before that teacher showed up would have probably erred. Okay, so let's back up. Many times you hire staff, they're going to have a strength. Some of them are going to tend to be strong on the academic side. Some of them are going to tend to be strong on the relational side. In a perfect world, you could hire that package of both, but usually we tend to be one way or the other. And so her predecessors were very relational, very good at connecting with the students. Students really enjoyed them. This teacher's strength was more the academics. And that started generating some issues. Part of, I think, what happened in that case, as I understand it, the students went home, talked to the parents. The parents didn't draw clear lines about needing to respect the teacher, and so this thing started gaining momentum. So then it comes back to, use board members, what do we do with this? So how do we respond to a situation where there's a critical spirit, critical attitude towards a teacher? Where do we start? Yes.
First of all, start by listening to them, listening to the ones who are critical, hearing them out, pray about it, and then figure out what to do next. You asked for the first step.
That's exactly right.
Maybe I gave you two steps.
Yeah, there'll probably be two steps, but I think as administration, your job is to get to the bottom of it, get to the root. Is this, in fact, a teacher problem, or is it a student respect problem? In all reality, it's probably some kind of a combination of both, okay? Because teachers don't always get it right. I'm a teacher, I know. And you owe it to the teacher to help them understand what they need to do different, what they're doing that is creating that attitude.
So if you go to the same church with them, you might already know they are critical of the church, they're critical of the school, they're critical of their job, they're critical of society. They are critical. And are we as a school board going to be able to do anything to try and help them go right? Or will we be the ones who finally give them the last kick to just get out?
Well, that's a $1 million question. Yes, so what do we think? How, if they're critical in a whole bunch of other areas of life, what do we do with that? Yes?
How can we effectively clear a teacher in that situation?
How can we what?
Effectively clear a teacher in that situation.
In supporting the teacher or helping the teacher.
Well, like if maybe he does have something to work on. But
you say if he doesn't?
If he does have something to work on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think that's where I go back to my experience as a chief at Bald Eagle. I used to be terrified of problems because I just wanted them to go away. And my idea was that if I gave the right kind of leadership to my group, we wouldn't have any problems. Well, you're in the wrong place if you're at a boys' camp and you got that idea. We're there because we got problems, okay? But I had to switch my mentality and see problems as opportunities, okay? And that comes back to you as a board. We got this problem with this teacher and these parents that they won't support him. Okay, it's an opportunity for growth. What can the teacher learn? What can the parents learn? Do you want the school to keep working? You've got to support it. We're not going to do everything right, but we're going to try. We're going to grow. To the teacher. Some honest conversations. You can't solve a problem till you know what it is. So sometimes you have to put some things on the table and have some difficult conversations. But that's okay. That's going to produce growth in the teacher if they're willing to hear that. And so as boards, we like it when things run smooth. They will someday when we get to heaven, right? But in the meantime, if we can change our mentality and not see problems as bad things, but see them as opportunities for growth and for development and for getting better at what we do. Somebody else start saying something? Yes.
One board I was on, we didn't have any negative parents because they sat in all the board meetings. We had open board meetings like the old boarders do. And the moms and dads came in and sat, and sometimes sunshine. Yeah, the more clandestine and tricky you pretend the board and everything is, the less buy-in you get, the more light you can shed, the better.
So you would feel like that was a good thing.
It was a good thing. We didn't. There were some dads that you would go home and complain to other dads, but hey, they were at the meeting, and the next meeting you would address it, hey, we hear some concern, and just that's how it was.
Wow, I like that. I guess that'd make our board meetings a lot bigger, wouldn't it? I should have mentioned I have the privilege of having one of my former students and now one of my board members here today, Matt Schrock and his wife, Catherine, so I appreciate their. I told him, he said he might sit in here. I was like, well, I said, you might be able to make more connections than some people do, but just kind of keep that to yourself. And he said he would. But yeah, excellent. I like that. And so many times, okay, when I first started teaching, as a head teacher, I did not sit in on board meetings. There are several board members who felt, you're not elected to the board, you teach. But I had a real problem with that. And we kept working on that, and eventually, I don't have a vote on the board, but I sit in on the board meetings. And I told them this. I said, I will submit to whatever decisions you make. You are my bosses. But it's going to feel completely different to me if I can present my perspective and you can hear where I'm coming from and the things that I see, and then you make the decision. Versus you just make the decision. I have no idea what the discussion was, what the other input was. It's just, here's what's happening. Go do it. And okay, I can go do that. But it's not very much fun. And so you have an excellent point that would help with that. Probably is going to depend a little bit on the size of your school, right? If you got 125 students, you're probably not going to be able to do that too well. Or How big is your school?
It was about 65 students.
Okay.
It was 25 pages or so.
Yeah.
Not everybody came every time. It was open.
Yeah.
Some came every time.
Excellent.
Now, I like to say reasonable people, like, if we actually believe that, let me say it this way, reasonable people make reasonable decisions given reasonable information. And a lot of times, we're doing ourselves a discredit to believe that the parents are that far different from us as board members. It's not our school, it's not our children, it's not our money. We're simply there to conduct the business. And so sometimes we get confused. We think it's our school and our children and our money. You know, and manhandle this thing. And I don't know if it makes sense, but
yeah.
I've been on both kinds of boards. I've sat on ones that were, you know, they actually, illustration, one time they said, well, I want you as principal to go talk to the dads about their girls' white socks because we don't want to do it at church. We have enough problems. So I've been there in that situation as a principal.
Lord bless you. But yeah, it's a great example of real life. I mean, it'd be nice if things would just go smooth, but they don't. And how can we build the kingdom by the way we respond? Because these things are bigger than just us. And God puts us as board members, administrators, teachers, etc., in place to continue His work, and it's an opportunity. There was a teacher who had a student in their school. They needed, geometry was a required credit for graduation. But there was a parent who pushed back against that pretty hard and trying to figure out, like, she was determined her daughter was not going to take geometry. It's like, well, this is one of the, well, can't we get an exception? But this is what we've, And again, asking that question, why? The mother, as a high school student, had a bad experience with geometry. So she didn't want her daughter to go through it. And so the teacher said, well, let's at least give it a try. And if it just absolutely doesn't work, then we'll go to plan B. And it worked fine. The daughter pulled decent grades and was able to pass it, graduate. But again, it comes back to understanding what's underneath the surface. What is driving that resistance or that criticism, I think is important for us to be able to reconcile it well. So what do you do with the idea that sometimes comes to school, Republicans are good, Democrats are bad, or maybe vice versa? Or maybe you've got both elements in school. Trump is a hero, or Trump is a villain. Some of those political things that come in. I think we need to know what's going on in our country, in the world. I think we need to be literate. But how much, what's the best way for school to address those things? How can you as board members give your teachers some direction on how to skirt through that minefield? Because again, we don't want to, you know, have Johnny go home and tell Dad, well, the teacher said this, and so now Dad and the teacher are at odds with each other, etc. What are some ideas, or what are some guidelines for how do we, it seems like, I don't think I'm that old, but the difference in the political landscape now compared to when I was a young person, it's a lot more antagonistic and just, yeah. I'm not sure what the word is that I'm looking for, but it's not real good. Yes?
Can you explain to them in a Christ-like way, like there's good and bad on both sides? Like you said, you know, he that lives without sin casts the first stone. Bringing up the Bible verse, you know, there's good people on the Democrat side and there's good people on the Republican side, and bad on both sides too. Mm-hmm. To look at it as we don't know exactly what they're going through, but
let's try to find the best in both of them. I don't know.
It's an excellent idea. Find the best in both of them. Neither side is without sin. Any other ideas?
To inform the classroom or the students that are talking about it, that we're here to study school, we're here to have school. Maybe you can discuss it with your parents tonight at home. Mm-hmm. Let them do that at home. Then it's the father and mother's job to serve it.
Good idea. Yeah.
Have a creative writing lesson on it.
Good job. Of course. He says have a creative writing lesson on it.
I actually did that one year. I think it was maybe election year. Or was there some major conflict going on? And so there was a lot of discussion. I found an article that was just talking about it and made some bold statements. And so I took it to school and made a creative writing lesson. And we had a lot of discussion on, you know, what does this author think? What do we think? Why? And all that kind of stuff. And the discussion actually just organically went back home around the supper tables, and I had some dads talk with me later, and they were like, I didn't even know that my son cared that much about this kind of thing. And there were some pretty good results out of it. But, you know, you can't be very Republican and support the Republicans or anything like that. You know, you gotta be non-biased here.
Yeah, because it seems like it's so polarizing. And again, I don't think, well, it feels like the culture around us is looking to politics to solve the problems. If we could just elect, like, whichever way you're bent, if we could just elect these people, they'll fix it. And the other side's going, no, but if we elect these people, they'd fix it. But I think what we need to do, yeah, say there's good and bad on both sides, send the discussion back home, but also help them to realize the kingdom of heaven is bigger than this, okay? The kingdom of heaven is more than this. And our solution, the solution is not in politics. You can't pass laws to make people be good. They need Jesus. And I think if we can help our students understand that, it'll help take the teeth out of the opposition. And again, that comes back to you as board members to enable your teachers to have that perspective or to encourage them to share that kind of perspective with the students. There are good attitudes that come from home. Let's not miss those. We've been talking about the negative ones that come from home. There are attitudes that are with our parents who buy into what the school's doing and support it wholeheartedly. I remember, this is a good story, so I'll tell you it was me. I had a student who could have cared less about school. Didn't want to get his work done, didn't care what scoring on it. The biggest problem with failing a test was it took time to do it over again. He just wanted to hunt and fish. Well, I can kind of understand that because I enjoy hunting and fishing too. So at least we had a place we could connect on. But just, yeah, didn't care about his grades, didn't care about, he just wanted to be outside. School was just a bother. And as he got older, it got worse. And there was a school activity that we did every 2 years. It was an outdoor activity. And took a fair amount of time, it was about a week. And the student really was looking forward to it. But I was talking to his parents, and it was their idea, and they said, you know what? We're going to tell him he needs to raise his grades if he's going to go along. I said, okay, that's fine, but we need to make it quantifiable. You need to pick a number, because it needs to be black and white. Raise your grades. Well, yeah, he did some, but how much? So we talked about it, and they picked a number that was very reasonable. They weren't asking him to suddenly be a super A student. It was just a significant improvement, but very, very attainable. He missed it by about 3 percentage points. So now what? Are mom and dad going to stick to their guns? I said, well, you know, you got really close. We'll let you slide this time. But, you know, they said, no. We drew a line in the sand. Your friends are all going, and you're staying home. Talk about a wake-up moment. That was a pivotal instance in that young man's life. And there was a significant change, not only in the way he did his schoolwork, but in his attitude toward life. Life has consequences. The choices I make and the things I do matter. And actually, a number of years later, I had the opportunity to be one of his co-teachers. And we talked about it. I said, you know, there was a time when if somebody would have got the two of us together and said, you know, someday you guys are going to teach together, we would have both dropped down in shock. But it's just, it was so encouraging to me as a teacher to see the change in his life. And a lot of that credit doesn't go to me, but it goes back to some parents who are visionary, who are willing to throw down the gauntlet and say, look, you're performing subpar. This is what it takes. And we're going to put teeth in it. That's the kind of support, that's the kind of backing that makes a school function and can make good things happen. It's supposed to be 3:45 when I'm done. Oh boy. And I thought I wasn't going to have enough material. Okay. Real quick. There was a teacher, after explaining a concept to a group of students and trying to help them work through it and be able to understand it. And one of the girl students said, but mister, we're girls. So? Are you saying girls don't need to? Girls can't? Teacher wasn't sure what they were referring to. But do you ever run into that in your school? Where there seems to be a double standard in academics, et cetera. Girls are here, guys are here. Or sometimes it's flipped. You know, the idea that, well, school is for girls and little kids. Real men go get a job, make money. Have you ever run into any of either of those in your experience? How do we respond to that? It goes back a little bit to what we talked about earlier. Is a lady going to use algebra as much as the guys? Well, you get into making dress patterns, you get into recipes, working with food, changing amounts. There's a lot of places where it is very useful. I think it'd be ideal if we can help our students understand that we're people. And girls aren't better, higher or lower, vice versa. They have different roles in the family, different roles in the church. But their value is not different. And that's something I'm not quite sure what to do with when you get that feeling that in some families there's a difference. The sons are treated differently from the girls. That could take a variety of shapes. Thanks a lot for your participation. I enjoyed that. I guess in conclusion, I'd just like to say the school is there to support the parents. The parents in turn must support the school. And if that's going to happen, the parents need to buy in to what the school is offering. And the school needs to be sensitive to what the parents want. What kind of benefit are they trying to receive from what the school is doing for their family? And when damaging attitudes do crop up, first identify the probable root causes before you react. Thanks again for your attention. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for listening. For additional recordings produced by the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee, visit The Dock for Learning at www.thedockforlearning.org.